Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the India Dependent Films Podcast, where we talk about films and film writing. I am Pankaj Sachdeva. With me, Rahul Desai, critic for The Film Companion and writer for other publications. We typically have a podcast every 3-4 weeks, and we have a few topics again today, so we'll go through them. But before we go there, Rahul, the usual staple question I ask: how have the last 3-4 weeks been? Anything interesting? And there was the World Cup.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it feels like nothing has happened apart from that in the last 3-4 weeks. And this time I'm actually prepared for your question, because I usually have to look back on what I've watched in the last couple of weeks, but now I'm very familiar because, but yeah, as you said, you know, the World Cup sort of hype became like a big part of our lives till at least last week, till last Sunday. So the movies almost felt incidental, but that doesn't mean nothing released. I was still like reviewing stuff during. I saw some interesting stuff. Last week was particularly interesting because there was this mainstream film called Farah that released, and it stars Salman Khan's niece, Alize Agnihotri, who's Atul Agnihotri's daughter, and it's her debut. It's actually quite a decent film. Like, it was, I mean, it has its flaws. It's, you know, for whenever it drops on OTT, it released in theaters. She is a good actress. I think she's probably the best in that family right now. And it's one of those typical sort of almost a con artist sort of thing, which because it is by the director of Jamtara, so it's more or less in the same genre. I found it quite interesting because it's one of the rare films that stays very rooted to like real life despite its very Bollywood leanings, and it has a very interesting last 10 or 15 minutes. So whenever people do manage to watch it, I'd be happy to discuss that, because not a lot of con artist films, not a lot of films about like cheating scams and all tend to take this particular step. So that's one film. And the other one which I really, really liked last week was Pokhar Ke Dono Paar. It was directed by Parth Saurabh. It's his debut. He's one of the few Darbanga filmmakers who've been making a splash lately. This made a splash on the festival circuit last year, along with Achal Mishra's Duin and a couple of other filmmakers from the region. This is a lovely film. It's on Mubi. It's playing on Mubi right now. It's about a young couple who's forced to return to their hometown because of the pandemic after eloping from their town. So it's a very interesting premise in that sense. It examines the dynamics of a relationship like that, and you know, both the actors are phenomenal, and it's one of the rare love stories, if you can call it that, that really stayed with me, and it tries to sort of dissect like modern relationships in a very unique way, because it felt very real, and it could have happened to anyone. And you know, it sounds almost funny on paper that they eloped, but they had to come back because of the pandemic, and now there's a strain in their relationship, and now she is wondering whether she should just go back home, or he is wondering how to get a job, and they start to resent each other, and it's very close to life. So if people do manage to watch that, it's playing on Mubi. It's one of the best Hindi. It is Hindi. It's not Maithili language like the other Darbanga films. It's beautifully shot, and it just has a mood that is hard to explain. So those are the two films I reviewed last week, and they were the only interesting things I watched in, I think, the last couple of weeks. Otherwise, it's been fairly disappointing. I think Tiger 3 came in between Salman's film, which earned a lot of money, I'm sure, but yeah, which was middling at best. It's to be honest, it wasn't the worst. It wasn't the worst Salman Khan movie this year. Forget in the last 5 or 6 years. YRF tends to have something about their films, but it was fairly disappointing in terms of at least the last hour or so. And Shah Rukh's cameo, of course, got a lot of attention. But even that felt predictable, you know, after a while. So yeah, apart from that, I really don't. I mean, there hasn't been a lot to talk about. I watched Railway Man, which was YRF's web series. I don't know if we talked about that, but it got decent reviews, and I was quite intrigued. And when I watched it and had to review it, it was one of the worst shows I've seen this year. I don't know what people saw in it, but you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion, but I just could not get past an episode without stopping 100 times because it was very typically a YRF production, and they had turned a real life event, which was the Bhopal gas tragedy in 84, into this very very artificial looking show with a lot of melodrama, with a lot of they wasted a very good cast, and it just didn't look like it was a show. It looked like a big film that was broken into 4 episodes. So, you know, far from being like one of the good disaster shows we've seen in recent memory, nothing like Chernobyl at all, but it is a wasted opportunity.
I got confused initially. I thought Alize, she was also like, somebody made debut in Bob Biswas. I thought she was the one, but I just looked and it was, I think, Deepak Tijori's daughter, Samara Tijori.
Oh, right,
she was in Bob Biswas. Yes. Yeah, so for a minute I was like, I thought she's also, she's made, but that's Deepak Tijori. And of course, I think you wrote 2 pieces, one on Manish Sharma's films, which I found worth sharing in the sense like I read them, and the other one was the World Cup one. So if anybody is interested, they can read through them. Okay, so I'll first talk about, we've spoken in parts about superhero before, but I thought we'll cover a little bit on the fantasy genre, which is sort of overlapping, but again there are some things which we can discover. So I was reading this for preparing this, you know, I sort of researched a little bit, and then somebody made this point that one of the biggest problems with fantasy genre they find personally is this heavy use of sort of prophecy and the common tropes. Do you feel that as well in the fantasy space? Has it reached a saturation point, like that filmmakers have stopped inventing anything new there?
I mean, yeah, actually, if you put it that way, you know, now the fantasy space it's become more derivative than original. Like everything you see is a version of what you've seen before. Maybe there are a few quips here and there, a slight freshness in terms of acting and self-awareness. That self-awareness is very annoying when it comes to superhero films, when it comes to rom-coms, anything basically. That really has gotten to me. And I think that's part and parcel of the social media era we live in. I think a lot of these films are being made for younger audiences. And because of that, I think that wide-eyed wonder that we used to see back in the 90s and 2000s or even 80s, when even things like VFX used to be a little novel and new, and it used to be a big deal to watch it in this film, now it's become so normalized that people are very happy to regurgitate the same tropes, and filmmakers are very happy to do that as long as they can achieve like a different visual aesthetic, or they can go wild with the VFX, or they can be technically a little gimmicky in their films. So I don't think a lot of it, like that era of creation somehow is over, and this is not only fantasy. It's most other genres. It's love stories. When is the last original love story you saw? Where rom-coms, it's thrillers, it's everything. It's whodunit. So everything, we are in an era right now where everything seems to have already been made, and now everything that will be made from here on is only going to be a version or permutation and combination of what has been made. And it's very rarely that you see something wholly original that will sweep you off your feet. And that's why I still like sci-fi, because there's still potential there. It's technically fantasy. There's a lot of possibilities there, but you know, you see a repetition in all kinds of genres.
Was that the same problem with Brahmastra, which you just explained?
I was just, funnily enough, just before coming onto this podcast, I was writing about Brahmastra again, because I think Ranbir Kapoor's film is releasing this week, Animal, his new film. So I was trying to update the list of the rankings I'd done of Ranbir Kapoor's roles. And in that, I had to add Brahmastra because I'd done this ranking before Shamshera or after Shamshera last year. And I was writing about it, and it's exactly, Brahmastra is like absolute manifestation of what is wrong with the genre, or what is what is safe about the genre right now? Like, it's sure, you want to look at it in terms of a Hindi context, a Bollywood context, okay, it took risks. It had scale, it had ambition. It dared to be like 10 years in the making, but that is not entirely by design. It's because they didn't know how to go about it, and they didn't just have the technology or the technique to even pull it off for the longest time. And when it finally did, you notice that it almost feels like the script became incidental by the end. People just, the filmmaker just wanted to blow you away with the VFX, with everything they've been talking about for so many years. And the dialogues feel like placeholding dialogue. The acting feels like it's on autopilot. So all the basics are just done away with because they have so, you can see that they're so excited to present what they've done in terms of, you know, in terms of technical prowess, that that everything else was forgotten. And this, I mean, like the script, let's be honest, like the storyline itself, I don't know if there'll be more Brahmastra movies and all. Storyline itself, it's more or less the same mythological fantasy thing that we've been seeing. Movies in the South have been doing it better for the longest time. And if Brahmastra was our best effort, then we have a long way to go. Like Hindi cinema has a long way to go. And that's not to say whole of Indian cinema lacks imagination. But Bollywood, you know, I don't think they are at a stage where they think in terms of, they think in terms of creativity that's needed for this particular genre. And it shows because they're afraid to take risks and they want to dumb things down and simplify things so that people don't, it doesn't scare away people from theater. Something too new cannot be done because then people don't know how to confront it. And you can see that philosophy, that way of thinking in the way people produce these films and direct these films.
For me, the Brahmastra, I didn't like it at all. The main issue was like, it was purely a derivative of Harry Potter. And no, we've all seen Harry Potter and we have grown up with Harry Potter, like the parents issue, yeah, and that sort of. So it wasn't like, you know, like Harry Potter is like an old film that he's reinventing. We've all seen that. So VFX and all is fine, but you know, as you said, the story itself was not very interesting to hold any sort of attention, which brings me to, you know, to,
I pointed out about this that it was a mix of at least 100 titles you could pound out, like you said, Harry Potter, and these are all older ones, like 15 years, 20 years ago they were done in Hollywood. And the problem is we are two steps behind, so we think we are doing something novel, but it's the audience we are catering to, the audience of filmmakers are catering to, have already grown up on these films. They've grown up on these stories, and we cannot afford to be two steps behind intellectually anymore. Technically is not the question here. Like, you can't keep thinking that, oh, at least we are doing something new in Bollywood. No, that's not how it goes. Your audience, now you have to give respect to the audience. They are kids who have grown into young adults and adults who've grown up on all these films and seen far better on screen, far better accomplishments. And to give you an example, it's where modern Gujarati cinema is right now. You know, if you see any of the trailers of the films, or even if you manage to see any of the films dropping on OTT platforms or releasing in theaters in Ahmedabad, they are all films that look like they were Bollywood films in the 90s. They are 20 years behind in terms of aesthetic, in terms of thinking, in terms of storytelling and concept. It's still like very vanilla family dramas going on, or like these dude bro films that used to be popular 20 or 15 years ago in Bollywood. Like, it's just at a lower stage of evolution. They are still to evolve a couple of more years, and they are still to respect their audiences enough to be able to understand it. So I feel like films like Brahmastra do the same thing in terms of fantasy.
You know, which brings me to Spider-Man, which you spoke about it recently, that you were surprised by it and that how much you loved it. Again, was it the same, the inventiveness of the genre, what they did? You spoke about it when, you know, in the initial introduction. Yeah,
we are talking about the animated Spider-Man, right? Like Across the Spider-Verse, maybe?
Yeah. Yes, I think so.
Yeah, because
I've not seen it. I'm getting it confused with Tobey Maguire one, not Tobey, the recent
the live action Spider-Mans are, see, the thing about them is like a lot of other superhero films, Spider-Man first of all was the beginning of the superhero, the return of the superhero genre in Hollywood. So any Spider-Man that's made now is automatically nostalgic, right? Like, and now they're starting to, I think the newer ones have started to figure out how to weaponize this nostalgia, how to sort of pull in audiences from the 2000s and 90s as well, because they want to see the Tobey Maguire, they want to see the older Spider-Mans in, and they've started to combine universes, doing the Marvel thing basically. So I feel like they're using it a little more smarter than a lot of other franchises, a lot of other superheroes. That's not to say it's original or anything, it's just they are trying to make something out of the derivativeness. The inventiveness is visible only in the animated ones that we see, the Across the Spider-Verse and Into the Spider-Verse films. That is easily one of the most inventive animated, forget superhero films, it's just most invented films ever made, because they address exactly this, you know, this flux, this stage we've reached where everything feels like it's been made before. And the premise or the even the animation and the visual aesthetic of these animated films are such a breath of fresh air, and they address exactly this tired sort of tropiness that has suddenly flooded like Marvel and DC and the fantasy genre in general. And it's part of the premise, like it's entirely part of the premise. Probably the central premise of that is like about a canon and how he goes from one Spider-Man story, origin story, to another. And it's very smartly done, and it's the only film that is genuinely honest about how we are genuinely in a creative crisis when it comes to imagination, when it comes to inventiveness. And it's very rare that you see films actually speak to that while making something out of that. That is originality. That is the only way you can be original now, by confessing and while being and making something out of nothing. But otherwise it's sort of like, as we speak, there's probably a Marvel show or a series sort of going to come out, and we're going to get a little more tired about it. And when we see something old, we'll get nostalgic about it. The cycle is the same. So I'm not saying the live-action Spider-Man films were great, but they were relatively, obviously, a slight change from what we've been watching.
Would you call Archie a fantasy film that's releasing?
No, not really. I call it a comic book film. I don't think it's the same as fantasy. They're comic book superheroes. That could be fantasy, because superheroes in general is fantasy. That's what you associate it with. I'd say Archie's is still like more of a, I don't know. I wouldn't call it fantasy, because a lot of the comic books we read while growing up were rooted in real life. Archie, sure, it was fictional, Riverdale, this, that, and the characters were fictional, but there's nothing fantastical about it. It was very much a teeny bopper take, a rom-com take on, I think every rom-com ever made is a derivation of that. So it's a take on life itself. So I wouldn't classify it as fantasy, but you know, it'd be interesting to see how Hindi film does comic books.
So how would you define a fantasy film? As you said, you know, fantastical elements. Are there other things that come to your mind when you think of a fantasy film?
I think like most of our definition of fantasy is fairly conventional, like in terms of like superheroes and sci-fi, and anything that is larger in scale and that cannot happen in real life is technically by definition fantasy, right? Like anything that makes your imagination run wild. Even children's films that tend to be about children's having like very creative minds, like, you know, and you know, put Harry Potter in it, put anything in it, like whether it deals with magic, whether it deals with it. I think all of that falls into that category. And for me, like even something like The Secret Life of Walter Mitty would be fantasy. Something like Emily technically would be fantasy also, because it's about a character who has a great imagination, both of them. And it's about introverts who have to escape the real world. And the whole point of fantasy is escaping the real world. So I love films that actually deal with that arc of creating your own world, living in your own imagination, and then turning that into a fantasy film itself. It's not easy to pull off, of course. And, you know, when you do, it does look beautiful. Like Guillermo del Toro has done it a bunch of times. He's very good at pulling off the tone and the vibe of it. But again, you know, because of the superhero crowdedness, because of the monopoly of certain genres over the hold it has over fantasy, we tend to only associate it with one kind of film.
And then, you know, of course, Rajamouli has sort of Bahubali series. But have you seen his earlier film, Iga? Iga, the one with the fly?
I watched it, and that is when I also realized that, you know, Indians can do a very specific kind of fantasy, and if they stick to that, I think there's nothing like it. Like RRR, like Iga, for example, like, I mean, the audacity of, you know, making a film about a fly, and both the Bahubali films. So I'm not saying that we have to be culturally specific, but I'm saying that we have a very specific way of growing up, of thinking, of processing the environment around us. And if we can channel all of that into our imagination and the way we imagine fantasy, then I think Rajamouli does the best job of it, which is very obvious. Like, sure, the West is lapping it up and all, but the reason they are also lapping it up is because it sort of plays into the sort of exoticism that they think India represents. And at the same time, it's also culturally very honest. Like, a lot of his films that he makes are very much rooted in Indian myths and in Indian fantasy and in Indian tropes and masala filmmaking. So, so if we can be sort of honest to our own creative myths, our own creation myths, then I think what we get is a Rajamouli. But as we see, not everyone can do it, because you saw Adipurush last year, or this year actually, it feels like years, but you see a lot of them abuse the genre, you know, for the sake of mythology, for the sake of politics, for the sake of whatever, religious statements. And I don't think budgets are being used the way they should be, especially in Hindi cinema.
Do you have any childhood favorites? So I'll say some of them, if they come to your mind. You know, there was Ajuba, there was Hatim Tai, is Takdeer Wala, Koi Mil Gaya. Any of the favorites come to your mind, childhood?
So films? I think for me, the first Hindi fantasy film I probably watched was Ajuba. And I was very much taken by it. Like, I think for a couple of weeks, I was very young, obviously, like just a couple of years old, but I remember for a couple of weeks, I thought that is the only thing a superhero can mean. That is the only thing, fantasy in general can mean. And for me, only Indians could have such characters. It's not till later I watched the old Superman films. My dad used to watch it with me, the old Superman films and the Hollywood films, basically, that had done superheroes before. So for me, my first experience was Ajuba. I actually quite like, I mean, we didn't do a lot of fantasy in terms of Bollywood films in the 90s. I don't remember a lot of them. But, and of course, there were, you know, shows like Shaktiman and this, but I never really took to them. I think it's not till Koi Mil Gaya that I realized that, you know, we can still pull off like simplistic science fiction the way Spielberg was pulling it off like 20 years before that. I think Rakesh Roshan at least had the ambition to make an Indian version of those films. And I didn't mind the first Koi Mil Gaya film, but after that, I'd rather not speak about like what happened with Krish and this and that, because I think only the first one was interesting because it actually tapped into our childhood favorites, you know, like a lot of the Spielberg movies, for me, I think my favorite fantasy film of the 90s was Jurassic Park. So you don't see a lot of Hindi movies, Hindi aspirations trying to sort of tap into, these Western blockbusters.
And anything you remember on Tarzan? It has the Wonder Car. It has reached some sort of a cult status, which I find, but I haven't seen it yet. I just keep hearing about it.
I don't know if that cult status is entirely serious or it's done in jest, or maybe it's a Twitter thing or something, because
It's a
I
joke. Yeah,
it
it's
has to be
maybe
a
a
joke.
joke.
It's like a meme, because I refuse to take it seriously, saying that Tarzan the Wonder Car has become now suddenly one of the most like sort of a cult fantasy film of our time. I mean, we did try a bunch of stuff then and it did not come off at all. I think, yeah, I would qualify even Raju Chacha in that category, if you can call it like, because it had something to do with children's film and magic and whatnot. So yeah, no, Tarzan though, definitely not.
बट मर्द को दर्द नहीं होता
After
दैट कैन बी
that, it
कॉल्ड
is a very
फैंटेसी
interesting cocktail. Yeah, it is an interesting cocktail of sort of fantasy and pulp and you know, basically all these action films also are a version of fantasy, which is a good point also, because I think at least, you know, films like the John Wick films and the Mission Impossible films are fantasy in their own way, and a very specific kind of fantasy. And I think Mard Ko Dard Nahi Hota was very meta, very rooted in that Hong Kong sort of almost like 80s VHS action film thing we grew up on. I think at least some of us grew up on. So I quite enjoyed that. Like, it's a nice little parody of fantasy, if you can call it that.
And then Marvel versus DC. Do you have, are you in one of the camps? Marvel versus DC?
It's really, I don't care. Honestly, sometimes when I'm watching these movies, I don't even know whether it's Marvel or DC. I'm not even the kind where, oh, wait, is Superman Marvel or DC? Is Spider-Man DC or Marvel? When I'm watching it, it does not matter at all. Because for me, it's just another superhero film. If it's good, it's good. If it's not, it's like not. I think I watched The Flash recently, I think earlier this year. And I actually quite liked it. I didn't mind it. I enjoyed parts of it. I liked the concept of it. It was weirdly poignant. I didn't even know it was a DC film till much later. I didn't know Flash was a DC comic book character. So I'm not really a comic book nerd in that sense. So I don't really have camps. But I do have like some films that stand out that work better than the others.
Okay, now I'll just ask a few films. You just say, would you recommend or not recommend? Okay,
Yeah.
we won't talk about them in detail. You just tell, like, would you like them or others to see or not? Phil Lorry.
Yeah, I would.
Okay, Phil Lorry. Dobara. Anurag Kashyap. Dobara.
Yes, recommend.
Then Chamatkar.
Oh, for sure.
Shark
Oh,
Fight.
yeah, that is a fantasy film you should have mentioned earlier. That's I think probably the second Bollywood fantasy film I saw, and such a big fan of ghost movies, I can't even tell you.
I remember we spoken about it where you spoke about Urmila
Yeah.
and Shahrukh and they're very different. Shahrukh looks so different in that film when I watched it recently, like
Really, yeah.
parts of it. Now and then Jajantaram Momantaram. Have you seen that?
I've seen it, but I would not recommend it.
Okay. Oh my God, the first one.
The first one, yes.
Okay. PK.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed
Okay.
it.
Okay. Ravan, RA.1.
Probably not, you know, save a couple of scenes here and there. No.
पहेली
Yeah.
एंड देन चंद्रमुखी द शाह सलमान श्रीदेवी वन वेरी ओल्ड
Oh,
नाइनटीज
yeah, the
नाइनटी
very
टू
old one.
नाइनटी थ्री
I mean, out of pure nostalgia, probably yes.
ओके एंड देन छोटा चेतन
No.
नो आई डोंट इवन रिमेम्बर छोटा चेतन
The three, I
एंड
mean,
देन
India's first three movie, of course, but yeah.
And then lastly, I'll just say, again, not sure if it is fantasy, but Kantara, so the recent
Yeah,
one.
definite recommend, but yeah, it's sort of folk fantasy almost, yeah, I guess.
Okay, all right. Let's move to another topic, which is slightly different hero, like two heroes who never really reached that pinnacle, but been there for quite a while. And I was looking at both of their filmographies. Like basically, I'm talking about Imran Hashmi and Randeep Hooda, and I couldn't find something like, you know, very striking apart from some decent performances. So first, we'll talk about Imran Hashmi. I remember you telling me that Awarapan is one of your favorite films. So I'd like to know about what your memories of Awarapan are.
I mean, so Imran Hashmi in the 2000s was definitely a mood. You know, combine him with the Bhatt Camp and the Vishesh film things. And they used to, I mean, we know all about the soundtracks. They had a very specific visual aesthetic. It was so brooding. They had particular playback singers. They had particular... almost a particular background score, and they had figured it out in the 2000s, and all of these films gel into each other if you think about them now. Of course, Awarapan was haunting for me back then, as I think 20 or so when I watched it, and I always felt like Imran Hashmi, as you said, you know, he was always supposed to be the next big thing, but without us really realizing it, I think he's grown on us as a performer over the years. First of all, I think he's aged well, whatever he's doing right now. But secondly, what he was back then was a great alternative to the superstar era that we had then. You know, sure, he got known as the kisser and started starring in these erotic thrillers. He represented a very specific kind of masculinity on screen. And a lot of it, these stories were toxic and about toxic people. And they were toxic love stories. And I think that was the era of it. And I think Imran Hashmi captured a very specific kind of mood. I would call it a young adult mood almost in that sense. And I think Awarapan was a good example of how they captured all these very pet themes of the Bhatt Camp, like obsession and toxicity and revenge and the musicality of it all and romance. And darkness, of course, everyone's favorite theme. So I think if I think about all these films, they all look the same to me right now when I think back. But I think all of us spent a lot of time listening to the soundtracks and imagining these films in our heads back then, because we all in our sort of angsty early 20s or late teens era then. And these films catered to that kind of mentality also.
Yeah, you know, for me, when I think of Imran Hashmi, I've also started to like him.
Yeah, and
he reminds me of KK, because both of these people had, like, you know, the music, all KK's great songs are primarily with on Imran Hashmi, and with, of course, KK's passing away, like, you know, I have a sense of a fondness for those films and those songs, even though they might not have aged well. And of course, Imran Hashmi also did that, you know, Himesh Reshammiya's that peak, Zeher, Aashiq Banaya, Apne, such great. So how was he in Tigers, the recent Tiger?
He was actually the best thing about Tiger 3, honestly. Like, I think he does the menacing act quite well now. I think he's aged well, he's become a better actor. He's not constricted by that desperation to be an alt hero now anymore, like he used to in the 2000s. Like, he always had to play a certain kind of character. I think now he's experimenting a little more and he's doing some interesting sort of roles. And I think he was very interesting in Selfie also earlier this year, where he was playing an obsessive fan to a superstar played by Akshay Kumar. And even in that, he was very interesting. And Tiger 3, he was definitely, I mean, he was the villain in this film. And he plays a very disgruntled ISI agent who turns into a terrorist of sorts. And, you know, it could have been very stereotypical. It could have been very, it could have gone into anti-Pakistan territory and all. But because of the way Imran Hashmi played it, it felt very personal. Like, it didn't feel like it was about country. It felt like he was a little, it felt like the character itself was a little unhinged. So it wasn't, it stripped the character of the nationalism and made him a very vengeful person in general. And he played, and Hashmi also plays it with that very, the way he used to play romantic or like dark heroes back in the 2000s also. So when he now plays villains like that, It's particularly striking because some of his mannerisms are the same, and he has a very lilting tone, and he enjoys, I think he enjoys being on screen also. Cameras learn to like him a little more. So it's nice. And he also, it felt like he knew he was the best actor on screen in this film. So I felt like he was enjoying that.
And, you know, I was reading your old blog also, where there was another Tigers he starred in, and where you called him like a best actor in an average film. Like, that was 2018. Do you remember that film, Tigers? Yeah,
of course I do. It was, I think it finally released on a streaming platform. I'm not sure. But I do remember. It was the director of No Man's Land. I'm not sure. Danis.
So I
think it was a very weird project, like Indian project, and it was supposed to be releasing for the longest time, but I actually quite liked Imran Hashmi in that. From what I remember, it was more of a bureaucratic medical thriller of sorts, and I think he did a good job, even though the film sort of lost its way. Again, you know, he's very good at playing these pensive characters who are actually have layers to their personality, who may not actually be who you think they are. And he does it well. He keeps you guessing all the time in all these roles. So,
yeah. And my next question was Selfie itself. You liked it? Like, I mean, you gave it a good review. How was the film Selfie, like, in general? Would you recommend?
I wouldn't recommend it. I don't think the film was great itself. I think, like, I think Fan did it way better. It's just that Selfie tried to speak to the current India we live in, that parasocial relationship between superstar and fan now, and the intrusiveness and the entitlement of a fan, of a movie fan. And it could have been a little more, I think it could have been a little more perceptive or a little more detailed in that sense, because could have, you know, addressed more toxic fandoms and the online sort of discourse. But it was happy to stay a little too simplistic, you know. It happy to just keep it between the superstar and the fan. It was an interesting premise, because, like, your biggest fan is a policeman, and then if you piss him off, he starts to make your life hell. And in that sense, it was understandable. There was like there was some very important or some very interesting points being made in the film. And even Akshay Kumar, for a change, wasn't playing like a nationalist hero or anything. He was actually doing the kind of role we hope to see him do more often. And Imran Hashmi was a very good performance. It actually kept the film from falling below average. It was a middling film by the end of it. But I think Hashmi was the reason for that. He had some very good moments in the film, especially when he's insulted by the superstar. You know, like the same way Gaurav was insulted in Fan, like in the jail sequence. I think Hashmi has his own sequence. Of course, again, it's in a police station, but it's different here. And I think the way he reacts to actors in the same frame has improved from how he used to, like, act in the 2000s.
You know, of course, this is not an Akshay Kumar topic, but the other decent film which I see sort of critically acclaimed this year has been Mission Rani Ganj. Have you seen that? I think you were traveling.
I missed that. And I heard some decent, like, I heard decent things about it. And I'm hopefully I'll watch it at some point. I don't even know how it did, whether it was a box office hit or not, and how it was received. But it sounded interesting. It sounded like the kind of rescue films that you want to get behind also. And sometimes if Akshay Kumar puts his mind to it and gets out of this bubble of saffronism, then he tends to be actually quite a decent actor. And, you know, and he's had quite a prolific year, and his OMG2 became a hit as well. So that itch has been scratched, even though technically he wasn't the star of that film. So, yeah.
Now, let's talk about Ek Thi Dayan. Did that film work for you?
Yeah, the first half was great. I think everyone you ask, it's the same thing. It's a classic example of first half, second half syndrome, right? Like, it just, it felt like a completely different film in the first half and completely different second half. And it's like Fan also, in a way. And I think one of the writers at Film Companion had written about Ek Thi Dayan when we had to do this first half, second half essay like a couple of years ago during the pandemic, I think all the writers did their favorite film that had a great first half and a bad second half, or great second half, bad. And I think Ekthidayan was one of them. And it's very legit in that sense. I don't like dividing a film into two halves because it's normally three acts, but it is what it is in Hindi cinema. And I think Konkana was, she was very like haunting in that film. Like, I still remember a lot of scenes in the first half. And I think Imran Hashmi was a very accurate presence in that film. I think he was a perfect to play that particular character, that particular husband in this film. And he does do a good job of playing shifty characters. Even, you know, they are good by heart, but they have dark secrets sort of thing. And I think it was a very well-made film till a certain point. And I still believe it could have been a well-made film overall, but just lost its way like towards the end.
Was it the same issue with The Dirty Picture, or was that film okay? Was that film fine?
Dirty Picture was, you know, I mean, enjoyable in a way. It was over the top. A lot of people liked it. Didn't work for me, honestly, because I thought even Vidya Balan was like totally over the top. But I think they wanted that. I think they were going for something like that, and which was almost method filmmaking in a sense, because they're trying to make a film that went hand in hand with the legacy of the actress of Sil Smita, basically. And again, you know, I thought Hashmi in these kind of films where he's basically just spouting a bunch of one-liners, especially the Milan Lutria films written by Rajat Arora, that Once Upon a Time in Mumbai and Dobara and this film, when he says the Rajat Arora dialogues, I used to get really irritated. Like, I used to first of all hate the dialogues, and I used to hate the smugness with which Hashmi used to say them on screen, and his characters used to say it on screen. But, you know, over time, I feel like once or twice I've revisited some scenes from these films and all, and I was like, sure, okay, it's campy on purpose, it's enjoyable in parts. And he played a bunch of these smug roles, whether he was a policeman or a don or in this film as he was. It just felt like it was too self-aware. It was trying to be too smart for its own good. And I think Hashmi used to overdo the smugness quite a bit. He used to think he's way cooler than he is. That's because of the roles he did in the 2000s. And that arrogance used to come across as smugness on screen. And it was not always enjoyable to watch. It was a bit kitschy. It was a bit it's just hard to see a grating after a while. And I've always liked him in his more sober roles.
And is Dil To Bachcha Hai Ji one of Bhandarkar's better films?
I think it's one of his more different films, but I don't think it is one of his better films at all. Sure, he tried a sort of rom-com as opposed to like the films he used to make, but Dil To Bachcha Hai Ji felt like a Love Ranjan film before a Love Ranjan film became popular. You know, it was one of those things. It was very, it was a typical formula, multi-starrer, male-driven. The heroines were placeholders, comedy at the cost of, you know, at the cost of women. It just, and, you know, wife jokes and this and that. I don't think it was a good film at all, but at least Hashmi was trying something different. I don't think he worked entirely as a comedian, though.
Okay. Now, again, I'll say 4-5 films of Hashmi, and you just say worth watching or not worth watching. Ghanchakkar.
Worth watching.
Okay. Crook?
No.
No.
Again, this is that smug Hashmi I was talking about.
I think Azhar will fall in the same category.
Azhar will definitely fall in the same category.
And then Shanghai.
Yeah, definitely worth watching.
Yeah, one of I think we've spoken about. We've spoken about Shanghai before. I think when we were talking about Abhay Deol's films as well. Yeah. Murder.
Yeah, definitely worth watching.
Murder, yeah. Gangster,
Yeah, same category. Gangster was one of my favorites of that decade, actually. Yeah.
Avarapan, we've spoken about. Yes. Tum Mile, that Rain thing one.
No.
No? Okay. Once Upon a Time in Mumbai.
I wouldn't recommend it now. Like, no. Rajat Arora is like a weak point for me.
And he's done some terrible films which I won't talk about, like there is Raja Natwarlal, Ungli, Mr. X. I haven't heard about those, like, so I'll skip those. Okay, now let's come to somebody else. We'll talk about Randeep Hooda next time, but I want to cover another actor, Juhi Chawla. She's been also a very interesting actor, been there quite a while, first, let me ask, does her pairing with Shah Rukh work for you? And who is your favorite pairing with Shah Rukh?
Her pairing with Shah Rukh definitely worked. Yeah, it definitely worked for me. Like, it had a very different kind of energy to it. It was not a... Weirdly, it wasn't a romantic energy. It wasn't a sexual energy. It was almost like a platonic energy. And I think they fed off each other very well on screen. Shah Rukh had different kind of heroines in that sense in the 90s. I think Kajol was romantic, and I think Madhuri was a little more sexual. And I think Juhi was like, you know, Betty to everyone's Veronica. So I think their pairing very much worked on screen. It represented a very different kind of love story that we normally not used to seeing, because she came in a lot of films in... it came in a lot of Shah Rukh films in the 90s where his main priority, first of all, he was flawed character, his main priority was either ambition or obsession. And she was almost secondary to that in most of them until she became like a partner in crime. So I think they made a very good pairing on screen. As for who my favorite Shah Rukh pairing, I think... it's for me, it is always between Kajol and Madhuri, but I choose Madhuri because I just had a massive crush on Madhuri in the 90s. And I think Dil To Pagal is very high in my list of good love stories in Bollywood. And Kajol, sure, they've just made a great couple. But I think I would have liked to see more of Shah Rukh and Madhuri movies in the 90s. We didn't get enough of them.
How Shah Rukh Preeti, does that work? Was there that sexual energy between them?
They tried it in Dil Se. Like, in a way, it was, I don't know, it always felt like she's one generation, one generation off. And it always felt like there's a mentor-mentee energy there going on more than, and I think Kalo Nao, their story is very, the character story is very representative of the energy between both of them. Because, you know, she fell in love with Shah Rukh, and Shah Rukh was like, you know, you'd rather fall in love with Saif. And it's one of those things where even though a lot of people say Veer Zara is probably one of the greatest love stories made in modern Hindi cinema, I don't necessarily agree to that. I thought that even though that film was very good, and I thought they had good chemistry in that, I don't think in general as a concept Shah Rukh and Preeti worked. I can't really put my finger to it, but I just think that Preeti had a very different energy compared to a lot of other heroines from her era, and because of that I always felt like she should have done more women driven protagonist films. She maybe didn't get the opportunity to do it as much as say Vidya later or Alia now, or even Kangna for that matter, but I always felt she didn't like, she wasn't supposed to be opposite heroes in a lot of her films.
And Juhi, one of her earlier films, I think her debut film is Kayamat Se Kayamat Tak, or maybe not, it's Amir's film. No. Do you, like, you know, I speak to a lot of 80s people, they mention Kayamat Se Kayamat Tak as one of their favorite films. Does that film have that same feeling in nostalgia for you?
For me, Kayamat Se Kayamat Tak, I was first of all like hardly 1 or 2 years old when it released.
So yeah, exactly. That's why I asked.
Yeah, so
the 80s people, you know, people who grew up in 80s, call that film as a little bit special.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same nostalgia value for me, obviously. Like, for me, 90s films would obviously, like, films like Dar or Yes Boss, for that matter, would really have that nostalgic value. I don't know. I watched it later and, you know, I wasn't part of the hype when it released. So, obviously, even though I liked the film, I wouldn't say it's one of my favorite films from that era or anything like that, because I can speak better about the 90s, because that's how my childhood was sort of intertwined with these films, with Juhi Chawla, with Madhuri, with Kajol, with Urmila and Manisha.
How was Sharma Ji Namkeen?
You know, Sharma Ji Namkeen was actually a sweet film. I actually liked it. I remember writing about it, and I was quite one of the very rare few times I was quite happy with my review, because I felt like it was a nice little set. First of all, like, sure, it was it wasn't supposed to be Rishi Kapoor's last film, but it turned out to be that. And I think they did a very good job of, like, sort of making something out of that by putting Paresh Rawal in the same role and sort of just two different faces of the same character sort of worked. And I think most of the cast was very affable in that film. Like, you know, whether it's the kids in that film, whether it's any of the senior actors in that film, I thought they all did a nice job, and it was fairly emotional. I don't know. See, it's hard to say how much of it was nostalgia or melancholy, because we knew it was Rishi Kapoor's last film or last release film. But I think it had a good impression on a lot of us when we watched it.
And how's Raju Ban Gaya Gentleman? Does that film, have you really liked that film, Shah Rukh?
Yeah, so I put that in the same category as Yes Boss, you know, for me, in terms of Shah Rukh and Juhi's pairing, in terms of the kind of ambitious, scrappy character that Shah Rukh plays in Bombay, in, you know, like, and the aspirations that he has. I think it was, both of these were very much heroes films, but I think Juhi Chawla did a fantastic role in both these films of sort of informing the hero arc while being a character on her own. And I think, yeah, it was one of the early Shah Rukh films I watched, and it was probably, I'd say, one of the first Juhi Chawla films I also watched, because I don't remember watching Qayamat Se Qayamat Tak before that. And Raju Ban Gaya Gentleman was almost my introduction to Shah Rukh Khan. I don't think Deewana was my first film I watched. So that was the film where I realized that, and I liked that Aziz Mirza used to use Shah Rukh and Juhi together in a certain way, you know, in terms of ambition, in terms of aspiration, the way he used, even in Phir Bhi Dil Hindustani, I really liked that, because they were both playing rival sort of news anchors in that, who then join hands, and very different kind of hero-heroine pairing compared to the more romantic ones, the more conventional ones in that decade.
You wrote in your review of Jawan that there was a little bit of Phir Bhi Dil Hindustani.
Yeah.
In that, I think we've spoken about this film before, but what was that thing in Jawan that reminded you of that? And will the Phir Bhi Dil Hindustani will work today in that this setting?
So Jawan for me was a updated, but a 2023 version of Phir Bhi Dil Hindustani, and it's not just because of that final monologue where he breaks the fourth wall and directly addresses the citizens of the country, saying, this is your chance to do something, vote this, that. And he did the same thing in Phir Bhi Dil Hindustani, except there was a terrorist subplot, and it was a little more Bollywoodish in a sense. It was a little more satirical. And I think a lot of us didn't know it while we were watching it then, but it was sort of ahead of its time. And I'd like to believe it would have worked today, but I don't think it would have, because Phir Bhi Dil Hindustani, you have to understand, wasn't a genre film. It wasn't an action film. It wasn't really, you couldn't slot it in any category. It was more of a spoof of politics, of the of Indian bureaucracy, of the system, of religion, of a lot of things, of, you know, of a perception of terrorism. And I think it was more of a very smart film in that sense, because it didn't position itself as any one single thing. Could have been a comedy, it could have been a satire, it could have been anything. The thing about Jawan is, because it was an action film, because it was a Shah Rukh Khan sort of vehicle, a lot of people saw it as something more than that eventually. It's action that pulled them in. It's the dialogue baji and the mainstreamness that pulled them in. But Phir Bhi Dil Andaz Kin Hindustani might have been talked about online a lot, but I don't think it would have, like in theaters, I don't think it would have run very well. And I don't think it ran then either. Like people didn't know what to make of it. They were like, are they serious? Are they not? Is this a joke? Is this not? Is Shah Rukh serious? Is he not? So, and sure, and it was very outspoken, very political, very brave for its time. And I would love a film to be made like that. But I think Jawan was the closest to that. It was very outspoken in its own way. And sure, you know, the action was almost incidental. The plot was just like a placeholder for Shah Rukh to say all these things and to be himself and to play a version of himself. But yeah, it's only these films that would work now and not those ones.
Juhi Chawla in Luck by Chance. What do you think of that?
Oh yeah, very nice role. Again, you know, Rishi Kapoor. And you know, she plays that what we'd like to call trophy wife so well in that, because she has her own agency as well. There's this lovely scene where she, when Rishi Kapoor is absolutely deflated when, you know, Romy Rolli ke Hrithik Roshan's rejected my film and he felt bad. Suddenly the moment turns emotional, saying aajkal ke bachche hai na. And then suddenly her face also changes. So she was bubbly before that. She was looking at something around the house and then she suddenly has this surge of empathy for her husband. And then you suddenly feel that companionship between both those characters, that they've been together for years. And sure, he's the provider and sure, she lives a very entitled life, a very privileged life. But there's genuine love between them. And that happened with that one split Juhi Chawla expression where she suddenly changes her tone and saying, you know, and she starts patting him on his back almost, at least spiritually, and be like, no, don't feel like that. And she understands the man and she's happy to be his cheerleader and she's happy to be someone who can lift him up on a bad day. And she's doing that. And that for me was Juhi Chawla's contribution to that very, very good film.
Yeah, I think she's so good in that film, like with the rings and that Parathe Pandit, like so good. Like, again, it's the writing, but she's just excellent there. How about Duplicate, that film?
Again, such an unusual Shah Rukh-Juhi pairing, right? Again, he's his boss at that, he's a simpleton. So again, I really like that they have this odd pairing. I think she was quite fun in Duplicate. She played into it well. She bought into the comic tone. She bought into the parody of it all. And I think, funnily enough, for some of her scenes with Monish Bell in that was, you know, the funny parts of the film also. Like, because, you know, he was also sort of almost a romantic rival to Shah Rukh in that for the beginning at least. And I think she was always a very gifted comedian. It just wasn't, we didn't see enough of it, you know, whether it was in this film, whether it was in Ishq to an extent, whether it was in Vantuka for most of all. I think she was very much noticed for her role in that. Oh, very over the top, but very, very, she had great comic timing. And I think she was one of the only actresses who was willing to use it at the risk of sacrificing her oomph and charisma and everything that actresses wanted to have on screen. She didn't take herself as seriously as the others. And I think because of that, there was this misconception that she isn't as serious an actress as the others and she never won awards because of that. But I think she's a very gifted performer.
Mm-hmm. And I think we've spoken about Deewana Mastana before, so which is one of your favorite films.
One of my favorite comedies of the 90s.
Yeah. How was the film? I have to watch it. This recent one, the Friday Night Plan.
Friday Night Plan is quite nice, actually. I got a very good vibe from it. I really liked Babil Khan in that. I really liked the actor who plays his brother in that. Very good cast. Juhi Chawla didn't really have much to do in that. She had a couple of scenes, say as many as Luck by Chance, because it's basically about two kids who get themselves in trouble when their mother goes out of town. And Juhi Chawla is the mother who goes out of town. So she's mostly on the phone once or twice, but she plays, it's nice. It's nice to see her mothering teenagers, and being pretty good at it as well. And like being very natural at it, because she's been a mother in real life. It all comes onto the screen, just like comes on when Sushmita Sen, the way she plays Arya. And she was also in Railway Men, and one of the many cast members in Railway Men. And none of the performances worked as such, but I thought Juhi Chawla had some integrity about the way she did it, because she was the Delhi person in this. She was the bureaucrat who was the good bureaucrat who was trying to bat for the people, trying to manage the crisis in Bhopal. And she was playing basically Madhavan's estranged wife in this, and she was mostly on the phone again all the time. I think she was like not utilized very well, but I thought she, if given an opportunity, she could have made the series better.
Another, I think, great film, My Brother Nikhil. That also, like, My Brother Nikhil and Phir Milenge, both of them released time, same topic, and both of them great films. For a change, Salman is good. Okay, now I'll again ask a few Juhi Chawla films, and you say, do you like them or you would recommend them or not? Okay, so I'll ask, not of course, she has a huge filmography, so I'll just start randomly. One to Kafoor,
yeah, I recommend that.
There Are,
no, poor version of Dar, I cannot recommend.
The thing is, we've spoken about her films when we've spoken about other actors. Yeah. Like, I remember she has, when we talked about comedy, she came up because she's a great comic timing. Jhankar Beats.
Yeah, I recommend.
I'm looking at her other, Salame Ishq.
Not really, no.
Gulab Gang.
No, definitely not.
No. Yeah, I think that Madhuri and it didn't really work. Bol Katha Bol.
I would recommend it. Again, nostalgia speaking, but yes.
Yeah. Not a great film, but yeah, great for film. That sort of like thing. I've already spoken about it. She got the film award for Teen Diwani. I haven't seen it yet. She's been acknowledged a lot for that.
Oh, wow. Even I didn't end up watching that. Nagesh Khurana, most of his films I watched, that one I didn't.
Okay. And then finally, I'll just ask one last, which is the recent one is... I'll ask one of her earlier films, which is with Aamir. Do you even remember this? Love, Love, Love.
I remember them, but I'd rather not remember them also.
I don't think it's a great film.
Yeah.
Okay. So now let me, I think we covered about an hour. I want to end by first thing. Are we getting ranking soon? Like, are you writing year-end pieces? Are they coming soon?
I don't know. Actually, I think we are doing year-end pieces for sure, like most other publications. But I don't think it'll be like... I'll think it'll be more like a individual sort of... it'll be a team effort more than like everyone doing their own year-ender. I am doing an essay, which I can only talk about later. But I don't think I'm doing like a list as such, because now with the amount of stuff coming out and the amount to keep up with, and now also combining lists of web shows and films, it's very difficult to really be like subjective about them also. Like, my thing is, I used to do best performances lists like at the end of the year, and last few years I've been combining web show performances and film performances. But now there's just so much, it's difficult for one person to pull it off unless you start working on it in August itself. So, because last year, I remember I had started saying, oh, I'll do a top 10 list like I usually do, and I'll combine both. And then by the end of it, writing it, it was a top 20 list and it was 4,000 words. So it just took a toll. And I don't think many people, I mean, people love to discuss lists. Everyone has their own sort of choices. But I think, you know, it's better to sort of write essays at the end of the year, maybe pick up on patterns of the year and write about them. But I'd really like to at least informally you know, rank my favorite shows or rank my favorite performances of the year, because long form storytelling is always worth writing about, especially in Hindi cinema, because that's the one area that's really doing wonders in terms of storytelling. Sure, there are the bad ones, but the good ones are great. So I hope to maybe write something on the side about it.
And I think Shah Rukh's Donkey is coming last week, so I don't know how many people have to wait for it.
I think everyone's keeping a spot. Everyone's keeping a spot in their list for that. Nobody's sure about like how long should we wait, because this is right at the very end and it's really putting everyone in a spot. But you know, it is what it is. That is how it is every December, so it's fine.
Yeah, I think for me, I felt like, you know, after 7th, I think it's over because there is Animals, Sam Bahadur and Archie. After that, I don't think there is anything. Of course, then the Shah Rukh thing is there, 24th. But I think then his film got postponed, Shri Ram Raghavan's Merry Christmas. That would have been what
I know. I was actually looking forward to Merry Christmas. I was under the impression it would release this year, but clearly I think it's in January or something. But yeah, that's a pity. I would have loved to watch that.
Okay. And then last question. You know, Kal Hona Ho completed 20 years. Anything to say about that film? Any memorable memories? Any favorite scene about that
film? I mean, I loved the film when I first watched it. It was one of my favorite Shah Rukh Khan films. Memorable scenes is... I mean, I'll come to that, but... I watched it recently again, like I usually watch a lot of older films again, and it hasn't aged well at all. I don't think it would have been the kind of hit it was like back then. It was also like a little, it would have been cancelled for a couple of things it did in terms of how the female character was treated, how the two men sort of just used her almost as a sort of tool to pass around, and it was a little cringy. Even the homosexual angle, the jokes made, Kanta Bai Shore was an iconic character, but I don't think it would have been cringy today is all I'm saying. So, but like, it is what it is. It really, when it released back then, it was very enjoyable. Favorite scenes, I mean, I really like Shah Rukh in the film, and I think, I don't think I have particular moments. I love his entrance when the slow Kal Hona Ho theme, instrumental theme plays and we see his silhouette in, and just coming like it's a superhero film if you look at it, because that's how he's introduced and he saves everyone in that film except himself. So that's the only way to look at it. And there's of course that scene that of course he enters also when they say ek farishta aayega and this and that. And there's also that scene in the station where he's reading out the blank diary of Saif to basically convince her that he actually likes her. That's another good scene. I actually quite enjoyed the Rajpal Yadav moments in the film, even though he's really funny, over the top, but very funny. But I don't think a lot of it would land today. Like a lot of the fat shaming, a lot of the, I don't know. It just doesn't feel like, it's classically one of those films that wouldn't have aged well. And it's one of the only Shah Rukh films that wouldn't age well, because I don't think he would do that film again today. Because what he represents in terms of female characters, in terms of beta male heroes sort of, you know, giving equal ground to female characters, I don't think he would have done it. But I think it was a happy memory in terms of his career at least.
You know, when I was watching Jawan's entry, it took me to that film, how Shah Rukh is presented as this angel, this mythical godlike figure. And he comes at the right time when people are praying in Jawan, and the same thing happens
there. Exactly.
Anyway, we'll talk about it some other time in detail. Okay, Howl, thank you so much, and very nice talking to you, and wish you all the best for the upcoming weeks. I think there's a lot coming up, Animals and Bahadur, Archie, and a lot of pieces coming up, so we'll connect soon. Okay, thanks everybody for listening.